Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 9, 2019. Sudanese police support protesters in Khartoum.
Police forces just issued a communique saying that they will never attack protesters, and the sit-in is getting bigger. And the estimated number right now is 2 million people around the army headquarters.
And an analyst says President Omar al-Bashir has done very little for his people.
The Sudanese mainstream came to such conclusion. They want to just get rid of Mr. al-Bashir. After 30 years of failed politics, a difficult living standard dividing the south of Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Protesters in Sudan are calling on the country's national security intelligence, accusing the national security intelligence of accusing thousands of attacking thousands of people gathered in front of Sudan Armed Forces headquarters, who are calling for President Bashir to step down. Reporter Naba Mohyaddin in Khartoum says two protesters were killed during a pre-dawn exchange of gunfire between the national security and Sudanese soldiers who have been protecting protesters.
The latest is many forces like student militias and security forces and riot police are trying to move protesters away from army headquarters by attacking them every 6 hours. And the attack at 2 a.m., at 8 a.m. every day, it's a very, very violent attack. Some people are killed from the three sides, from security side, from army side, and from protester side. But the latest thing is police forces just issued a communique saying that they will never attack protesters. And the sit-in is getting bigger. And the estimated number right now is 2 million people around the army headquarters.
This latest communique from the police, it could be from activists or it could be from anybody. What is the proof that this is coming from the police? Was this an official statement on a television or on radio?
The first thing, yesterday, Reuters interviewed the Minister of Interior. They confessed the number of the people killed. And today, media office of Sudan police has just released it, not an activist, a very reliable communique. And eyewitness has noticed that this morning, like riot police, they didn't attack people. So only security and student militias are attacking army protesters and other people.
I've been watching the Sudan television this morning, and they are showing pictures of the garrison, the military headquarters, where there are no people. I mean, have you watched Sudan television this morning? Is that the clear picture of what is happening in Khartoum?
No, this is just a crap. This is bullshit. Sorry for the word, but this is crap. Because I have eyewitness, and I can send you, and I can tag you on live on Facebook, that 2 million at least of people are in headquarters. So this is very old photos. And this is the official governmental channel, so they must show this. But right now, all of my friends, my family, my colleagues, every journalist I know in Sudan is in the headquarters. So this is just crap.
And so you're telling me that military headquarters is now open to the protesters and they are camping inside there?
Yes, they are camping inside and they are protecting the bridges and the main streets leading to the army headquarters. They are protecting it from security.
And where is President Omar al-Bashir? It's my understanding that his house is inside the military headquarters. Where is he?
No, he's not in the military headquarters. Nobody is certain about where is he. But yesterday, he had a meeting with NCP, and they issued a communique at 9:30 p.m. And they said that they will just sustain the security of the country, and we will pass this crisis altogether. And just hours after that, after the communique, security forces and Islamic student militias attacked people.
What we are getting from the social media and the wires is that the military, the Sudan Armed Forces, is standing with the protesters. And the various militia and the national security are attacking the protesters. Yeah. Is that the right picture?
Exactly. 100% right.
How many people were killed in raid on the protesters, which happened this morning?
Very credible, but I can tell you the exact number. The two protesters were killed in this morning, and one from army and one from security. But there is dozens of people injured from three sides.
And how about the streets of Khartoum? Is life normal on the streets as usual?
No, it's not normal at all. And whenever people are, the city is getting bigger, like from 4 p.m. till 12 p.m. every day, the protest is getting bigger, the city is getting bigger because people from the states like Atbara, Dungula, and Madani, they come to join the city. Whenever the army is protecting protesters, militias are getting revenge or in the neighborhood of Khartoum, like the other streets, Sittin Street, Ebed Khatim Street, and Asari. And they even fire on people in the street. They shot them.
The army is siding with the protesters, but has the military made any statement? Is there any statement from the military?
No. The military didn't say any statement. But I have reliable sources inside the military saying that they will never let protesters alone. The leaders of the protest and the sit-in are the protesters themselves, but they are responding to SPA, Sudanese Professional Association, call to sit in and to start open strikes in front of the army headquarters. But there is no real leader. Only SPA is organizing everything, like organizing data gathering, organizing, documenting, organizing the calls for the sit-in and the protest since December 19 until this moment.
That's Nabah Mohiyadeen, Sudanese reporter, speaking with me from Khartoum earlier today. In Sudan, women have been at the forefront of the protest, leading marches and at times risking their own safety to speak against President Omar al-Bashir. Sudanese American women from this weekend's protest in New York say the women in their home country are well positioned to lead masses in Sudan because they have been burdened by policies of the government that protesters say have crippled the economy and created conflict in parts of Sudan.
Okay, my name is Fatima Haron. Women have been very active. They have been the fuel of this revolution. They participated in so many things, in planning, actively protesting, facing the brutal attacks from the government. They also encourage and they make food and help. They've been also working as intelligence. They became the leaders for their families, actually, because women in the past, they've been looked down at. So for a woman to go out is a big thing, and they have no fear. They're very courageous.
What's your name?
Hanan.
What is it about the woman that makes her so unique to this revolution?
She fights for her rights, and that's like bold. Like, people think that women shouldn't fight for their rights and stuff, but like, to see a woman go out there and say like it's time for a change, that's really bold.
My name is Mahasin Muhammad. Woman organizing most of the the events in all around America. They are always in the top, and always they support in Sudan, and they support in whatever going on. I'm proud of women all around. Really nice Kandakar.
Women in Sudan, through the history, they played big role in the revolution through the history. And this one is a big concern for them, for the whole country, because this is a dictatorship regime. They treated women brutally. They treated them with injustice. They detain women. They torture women. They use violence against women everywhere. It's physical and even words, like physical and words. Verbal. Yeah.
Can you say and spell your name?
My name is Amira Zahir, and I am activist, and I am a Sudanese woman, and this concerns me because we, in all in Sudanese culture, we treat women with respect, and we have integrity. But this dictatorship regime suppressed women.
Those voices of women in the Sudanese diaspora speaking to Ayendeng Bior from New York. Some Sudanese living in Juba say they are in solidarity with their fellow Sudanese in the call for President Omar al-Bashir to step down. One trader at Juba's Jebel Market says Sudan needs change. Winnie Chirino has this story for VOA from Juba.
Isim Assam Abdallah, a trader in Jebel Market, says his brother was abducted in 1999 by Bashir's government and has never been released. Abdallah says his brother's disappearance has severely affected his family.
We are sick about forced democracy, and we will do it, surely, because the reason of that, reason of the moving government of al-Bashir is completely now. That's now. I'm support with all my power the change on Sudan, because change must be now at this time, on these days, must take al-Bashir out of Sudan.
Badwil Budur Fadil, another trader at Jebel Market, says many of his family members living in Khartoum have been affected by the ongoing protest. Speaking in Arabic, Fadil says he is impressed with the courage of the protesters.
أنا مرتاح جدا جدا لهذه الثورة ويعني أول حاجة أنا عز الثوار.
I am so happy for the protest that is taking place, and I would like to pay my condolence to those who lost their lives since the protest began again on April 6th up to today. The Sudanese people who are within and outside, who have graduated, could not find jobs in the country, and the economy has deteriorated.
Abdallah Haman, another trader at Jebel Market, says he was born and raised during Bashir's regime. Speaking in Arabic, Haman says many people have been killed in Sudan, but Bashir's commanders have never been held accountable.
We are doing adala wal hurriya. Al hakuma sudaniya huwa hakumat al dima.
We want justice and freedom. The government of Sudan is a government of destruction. The government of Sudan has killed innocent people and have killed many in Darfur since 2004 and 2005. And we don't want this destructive government. We need an exit of this failed and destructive government. And we, the citizens, have the right to say enough to this rule.
Protesters gathered at the military headquarters in Khartoum over the weekend to call on the army to support the protesters' call for Bashir to resign. Sudan's interior minister said on Monday that 7 protesters had been killed and 15 injured, while 42 members of the security forces had been injured. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Meanwhile, Sudanese Defense Minister General Awad Binuof acknowledged the reasons behind the popular protests. He vowed the army would prevent any slide into chaos. The protest organizers formed a council to open talks with the armed forces aimed at agreeing on a transitional government that represents the wish of the revolution. Nabil Najim, a political analyst in Cairo, spoke to VOA's Mohammed Al-Ashanawi about the escalations in Sudan's popular uprising.
The Sudanese mainstream came to such conclusion. They want to just get rid of Mr. al-Bashir. After 30 years of failed politics, a difficult living standard, dividing the south of Sudan, so many factors generated such genius slogan, just fall, that's all. And I would like to just, you know, emphasize that history keeps repeating itself sadly in this area. Dictators don't want to learn from the repeated lesson of the history. Mr. Bouteflika kept, you know, resisting to listen to the people, and by the end, he is out. Mr. Bashir is just wasting time.
While Defense Minister General Awad Ibn Auf acknowledged the reasons behind the popular protest in Sudan, he vowed that the army would prevent any slide into chaos. What does that mean?
To be honest with you, it's just another local consumption political speech. Sudanese people don't want to listen to such, you know, cheap talk. I think Sudan now is on the brink of either a new phase or a chaos. I believe very much that Sudanese people are mature and they know exactly that they have to look after the stability of their country. So the way out is Mr. Bashir hands power either to military council, which will be able to launch a dialogue with the council, which had been launched by the opposition 2 days ago. And that body is the official body of the Sudanese mainstream opposition, or to a military council, which would start in 90 days the procedures to fold up the pages of 30 years of regime.
As you said, the protest organizers had formed a council to open talks with the armed forces aimed at agreeing a transitional government that represents the wish of the revolution. Would the armed forces facilitate such a transition?
They will have to listen and they will have to obey the will of the people. And you cannot ignore the international community's reaction to what's going on in Sudan. The European Union said it is an unprecedented number of people have come out calling for change. And the people of Sudan have shown remarkable resilience in the face of extraordinary obstacles over many years. UK and UN have called for restraint and urged that the protesters' complaints be heard. Mr. Bashir, who has seized power in a military coup 30 years ago, on the other hand, faces genocide charges as the International Criminal Court relating to extensive human rights abuses perpetrated by Sudanese forces. So, Sudanese people are quite mature, they are intellectuals, and they are qualified to manage their affairs. All what we need now is that President al-Bashir should come to the reality of saying, enough is enough, peacefully hand over power and come to an agreement with the Sudanese people, because this is the end.
That's Nabil Najim, a political analyst in Cairo. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed Al-Ashanawi about the escalations in the popular uprising in Sudan. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we'll look at the risk of moderate drinking. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what sports do you wish you could play?
There are sports I love watching, though I would love to learn or maybe I would love to play them. But there are these two sports that I play most, like netball, that's my favorite, then volleyball.
Basketball, yeah, I think it's the sport I wish I could play. I just don't have the highs for basketball, but yes, I love basketball and I play a bit.
Badminton. I have my uncle who enjoys playing badminton, so we normally spend much time with him, and I like it. It's another sport which can help you work out your body.
American football. It's a nice contact sport. I like it because it's very physical and utilizes your entire body. So, yeah, it's a sport I'd like to do.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. And today, we are talking about the impact of moderate alcohol consumption. For years, drinkers thought having one or two drinks a day is okay for health. But a new study from the University of Oxford says that might not be the case. From Washington, Ayen Deng Bior has no good news for those who love drinking.
Moderate drinkers, beware. A new study out of the University of Oxford found drinking about 100 grams of alcohol a week could raise the chance of a stroke or blood pressure. Dr. Iona Millwood is the lead author from the Medical Research Council Population Health Research Unit at the University of Oxford. Dr. Millwood says the report found evidence suggesting that even moderate alcohol can increase chances of a stroke.
And we found that there was actually no protective effect of drinking, say, one or two drinks a day for your risk of stroke. In fact, risk of stroke would be increased slightly if you drink moderately.
The risk of stroke rises by about 10 to 15% with moderate drinking, according to the report, which is contrary to previously held beliefs. For almost a decade, researchers followed over 500,000 men and women in China, where a large portion of the population has a genetic variant that determines alcohol tolerability. The genetic variant alters the way the body metabolizes alcohol. These genetic variants were measured in 160,000 of the men and women, says Millwood.
The genetic variants in men affected blood pressure and risk of stroke. However, in women, because they weren't drinking alcohol, these genetic variants had no effect on blood pressure or risk of stroke. And what this told us was that the effects we saw in men were actually due to the alcohol rather than some intrinsic effect of the genetic variants themselves.
The World Health Organization says alcohol consumption can lead to chronic diseases like liver cirrhosis, cardiovascular disease, and some cancers. WHO also associates drinking with development of mental and behavioral disorders. Millwood says alcohol has a whole range of psychological effects on the body and affects many systems in the body.
I mean, one of the main things that we found was that alcohol increases your blood pressure. It has quite a large effect on blood pressure. And this is confirmed in short-term randomized clinical trials of small amounts of alcohol intake, and they will show that alcohol does increase your blood pressure, but it also does other things. It affects your balance of cholesterol, it also affects your liver enzymes and your liver function. And these are just a few of the things that alcohol can do.
The report was published by the Lancet Medical Journal. The study also found that heavy drinking could increase the risk of stroke by about 35% and significantly raise one's blood pressure. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
President Salva Kiir traveled to Rome to attend a retreat organized by the Vatican for South Sudanese leaders. Some residents in Juba say the papal visit should transform the views of South Sudanese leaders so they can stop a repeat of bloodshed in their country following the five-year civil war. Dimor Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The Anglican primate, Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, will lead a spiritual retreat tomorrow in Rome for both political and religious leaders in South Sudan. The Vatican says President Kiir will join Riek Machar, Taban Dengai, and Rebecca Nyandeng, who are the vice presidents in the transitional government of national unity, which is scheduled to be in place next month under the terms of the September revitalized peace deal. Presidential spokesman Ateny Wek Ateny told reporters at Juba International Airport that the meeting in Rome is symbolic, but says the talks at the Vatican could have an impact on the leaders' decisions which shape the country's future.
The reason why Pope Francis and with the leadership of the Church of England and the Church of Scotland, they saw it necessary that the leaders of South Sudan should be called for a spiritual retreat so that the 3 million the 3 billion Christians who are represented by the three leaders of the church are able to pray for South Sudan. If 3 billion people pray for one given country, the heart of political leaders will be changed because they are actually praying for the change of heart so that this peace can hold and it is implemented in letter and spirit.
Previous South Sudan peace agreements have been violated by both government and opposition forces several times. Eight members of the South Sudan Council of Churches and the Archbishop of Gulu, John Baptist Odama, will also attend the retreat. Some residents of Juba say they think it is possible that such a retreat could cleanse the hearts of South Sudan's leaders and change their attitudes for peace. Juba Town resident Wani Pili believes the retreat will bring change in South Sudan.
Vatican, that is a holy ground, you know. When someone is stepping there, at least I think, whether you have a problem with your counterpart, at least you have to change your heart. By going there, at least you have to humble yourself. You have to forget the past. So I'm seeing that going there sometime may bring some positive changes in outgoing implementation process.
Another Juba resident, Abau Margaret, says it all depends on the personal commitment made by South Sudan's leaders.
If they have that faith and they are all Christians, everything will just work. And with the Pope, everyone knows, we all believe. The moment he blessed anything, it will work. And with that courage and faith, which they have, that strong belief in God, according to me, it will really work, because the country has really gone through. But
Juba resident James Lado Modi sees things a little differently. He says when South Sudan's leaders meet at the spiritual retreat, they must ask for forgiveness for the destruction their thirst for power has caused across the country.
We expect them to have a heart that can change this country, which means that they have to forgive one another and they start a new beginning, because the war has taken a long time and many people have died. So we completely, hope that their hearts will be changed when they come back from Rome to ensure that the implementation of the peace agreement restart, so that the people of South Sudan should have a new mind, new heart, and a new chapter for development.
The participants at the pontifical retreat will be handed a Bible, each signed by His Holiness Pope Francis, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Most Reverend Justin Welby, and Reverend John Chalmers, the former moderator of the Presbyterian Church of Scotland. Inside the Bible, there is a highlighted message, "Seek that which unites, overcome that which divides." For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
That's our show for this Tuesday, and we now leave you with the song "Celebrate" by Ruth Matiang.
Shangilieni Bwana, shangilieni Bwana, ameshazaliwa. Shangilieni Bwana, shangilieni Bwana, shangilieni Bwana, ameshazaliwa. Wala la la, wala la la la, wala la la, wala la la, wala la la, wala la la la, wala la la. Well, all alone, I woke up one morning and realized that I was new.
Shangilie, Shangilie.
A savior was born in my sins, he washed away.
Shangilie,
wonderful counselor, mighty God.
Shangilie, Shangilie.
A savior is here, let's celebrate him today. Ay, 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 ay. Shangilie, Nibwana. Shangilie, Nibwana. Shangilie ni Bwana, shangilie ni Bwana, shangilie ni Bwana, amesha zaliwa. Wala la la, wala la la la, wala la la, wala la la, wala la la, wala la la la, wala la la, wala la la. I woke up one morning and realized that I was new.
Shangilie, shangilie.
A savior was born in my sins, he washed away. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wonderful counselor, mighty God.
Shangilie, Shangilie.
A savior is here, let's celebrate.
We've been listening to Ruth Matiang with the song Celebrate. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. We invite you to share your thoughts about anything you have heard on this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. If you're planning to be out of Juba where there are no VOA FM stations, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kHz, 13865 kHz, and 15180 kHz. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Let's celebrate our God, let's celebrate.